Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Welcome back to the Brian Lehr Show on WNYC. I'm Sarah Gonzalez filling in for Brian Lehr. Donald Trump's pick for education secretary has never run a school district or a state education department. Trump's pick, Betsy DeVos, is a billionaire Republican activist and philanthropist in Michigan who has spent millions of dollars supporting the use of taxpayer dollars on private and religious schools. She and her husband have supported anti-affirmative action and anti-gay marriage efforts. And if she is confirmed, which is likely, Betsy DeVos will be in charge of a department that spends $68 billion a year, a department that oversees areas from pre-kindergarten to sexual assaults on college campuses and discrimination practices in school discipline. That is what Dana Goldstein has written about for Slate. Dana is the author of The Teacher Wars, A History of America's Most Embattled Profession, and she is a journalist who writes for The New Republic and The Marshall Project. In her most recent article for Slate, Will Trump Overhaul Public Education? From Privatization to Civil Rights, His Department of Education Could Transform the American System. And Dana Goldstein joins me now in the studio. Dana, thanks for being here and welcome back to the Brian Lehr Show.
Sarah, it's great to be here.
So tell us a little bit more about who Betsy DeVos is. What do we know about her background and her experience that makes her qualified to run the U.S. Department of Education?
So Betsy DeVos is a Republican funder, philanthropist, advocate, and lobbyist from Michigan. She's connected to several really big companies. Her father had a successful auto parts business. She then married Dick DeVos, who's the heir to Amway's fortune. And her brother is a leader at Blackwater, the military contracting corporation. So altogether, this family has given millions and millions and millions of dollars to conservative causes. And her overriding passion, as you said in your introduction, is school choice.
And she's also the chair of an investment management company, I believe, which, I mean, is that, I'm trying to get the connection between her experience as a philanthropist and a major donor to running a department that spends $68 billion a year.
She's never had an experience like this before. I mean, she's on the board of several nonprofits and has helped found different organizations as a funder, but she has never run a large bureaucracy and, in fact, has never really had a traditional job. I mean, she comes from intergenerational wealth, has not had to work for a salary. So she's quite an unconventional choice. However, she is a Republican insider. So in that way, not particularly outside the scope of folks you'd expect a Republican to tap.
And what does Trump's pick in Betsy DeVos tell us about what his education priorities are?
So during the campaign in September, he rolled out an idea to spend $20 billion federal dollars on vouchers for poor parents to send their child to any school. And if we look at existing Republican congressional proposals to do something like this, those vouchers would be available to parents to send their children to private schools, to charter schools, to magnet schools, but also controversially to for-profit schools, to religious schools, to virtual schools or schools whose classes only meet on the internet, so kids would be at home on their laptops. So this is what Trump suggested he would do. And certainly Betsy DeVos has lobbied for government funds at the state level to do exactly this. So I think by tapping her, he shows that he's quite serious about the education platform that he ran on. It's not a throwaway idea, but something he would really like to do.
You said a $20 billion voucher program for low-income
That's
families?
That's right, yeah.
So is that something that he and Betsy DeVos could actually do on their own, or would this require Congress appropriating new money?
Yes, it would require Congress. And I think that's why it may not be totally realistic. The Every Student Succeeds Act is where that money would have to come from. And that law was just passed in 2015. And so do Republicans in Congress who worked really hard alongside Democrats and President Obama to pass that law want to crack that law back open to reallocate the funds? The law that passed did not include funding for vouchers. There are actually some Republicans who oppose that idea. So it would be a slog. However, there are other ways that you could fund maybe a smaller voucher program. You could give parents tax credits for private school vouchers. That tends to really help middle-class families. It doesn't do much to help poor families. Or you could ask Congress to create a new law, a new funding stream for this type of thing.
And you have written that Betsy DeVos will likely move to privatize schools. How would that happen? What would a more privatized education system look like?
Well, if we go back to 2010, one of President Obama's big priorities was to kind of tamp down on profit-making opportunities, especially in higher education. So he removed the role of banks in lending money to students to go to college. They were these for-profit middlemen, and now the federal government is able to directly lend to students. Now, if Trump wants to undo that, if Betsy DeVos would like to undo that, they will need help from Congress. Republicans in Congress hate that President Obama did this, so they may be excited. President Obama has also forced the shutdown of hundreds of for-profit colleges whose students really were failing on the job market, for-profit colleges that were not providing an adequate education to their students. It would be simple, just with a letter of guidance, for Trump and Betsy DeVos to roll back a lot of that work. So I think what we know about Betsy DeVos is she's quite ideological about the role of the what she would call the free market in public education, whether it's K-12 or higher ed. And we can expect her to sort of ease regulations around the abilities of these for-profit players to be part of our federal education system.
Listeners, who out there is excited about this choice? Is it appealing to parents out there who are maybe anti-testing or anti-too much testing, which if we have a more privatized school system, doesn't that maybe mean less testing? Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. You're listening to The Brian Lehrer Show, and our guest is Slate contributor Dana Goldstein. So Dana, do private schools mean less testing?
That's a very interesting divide within the school choice community. So if you look at Indiana, where Vice President-elect Mike Pence has been governor, they did give vouchers for students to attend private schools, but they said those private schools had to test students in a similar way to public schools. So they were eager to hold those private schools accountable. Now, Betsy DeVos disagrees with that Pence strategy. She really wants to free schools from these accountability and oversight efforts. She is not someone in the school choice community who is very excited about holding schools strongly accountable for their student test scores.
You write that civil rights are sort of on the line here. Tell us more about that.
So the Office of Civil Rights is a small office in the Department of Education that President Obama has been very active with. This office drove his efforts to hold colleges and universities accountable for the way that they investigate sexual assault. And hundreds of colleges have been investigated. Trump could easily just halt those types of investigations and roll that back. Also, we know that President Obama has sought to protect transgender students' rights to use the bathroom of their choice. Again, very simple for the Trump administration to just say that is not something we're interested in. So these are all kinds of issues that we don't necessarily think of as part of the Department of Education, but President Obama has had an aggressive way of using the department to enforce civil rights law.
And part of what you do in your article, in your most recent Slate article, is you sort of take us through all the different aspects of the Education Department's role, and you tell us what is likely to happen. So I want to go through some of those before we go to some listeners. Let's start with school discipline. So in 2012, the Department of Education's Office of Civil Rights published data for the first time, national data, which showed us that students of color were disproportionately being expelled from school and suspended. And in your article, you write that the department told school districts, and this is under Obama, the department told school districts that racial inequities in discipline would be interpreted as potential evidence of discrimination and could trigger federal investigations and lawsuits, which is pretty harsh stance on that. Do you imagine the Office of Civil Rights, I mean, like, could that go away?
I think it will go away. Yeah. I mean, Trump ran as a law and order candidate. That stance is typically associated with believing that police have a role to play in school discipline, that suspensions and expulsions are fair punishments. Now, we know that students of color, disabled students, are disproportionately suspended and expelled and arrested for the very same misbehaviors that white students generally are just kind of brought to the principal's office and may get a second chance to improve their behavior. It's just very hard to see a Trump White House and a Betsy DeVos Department of Education continuing the Obama's administration's efforts here.
And what would you say some of the staples of Obama's education policies are? Is it the civil rights data? And how likely is it that they can all go away?
I think there were two big staples of President Obama's legacy on education. The first is school accountability. He really strongly believed in holding schools and individual teachers responsible for their students' test scores. This is something that a lot of people criticized on the left as well as the right. And I think here we have to wait and see. Within Trump's inner circle, Betsy DeVos is someone who supports less testing, looser accountability. Mike Pence is someone who may support more testing and more accountability. So we have to wait and see with such an unpredictable incoming administration who in the inner circle kind of wins out there. And then the second big legacy of President Obama was the civil rights legacy that we're talking about, student discipline, campus sexual assault, LGBTQ students. There's so much that President Obama tried to do on looking at discrimination in our school system. Here, I think it's very safe to say that we'll see big rollbacks under Trump.
And they can be fairly easily reversed because he kind of did this through executive regulations.
That's right. Yeah. Anything that President Obama did through executive regulation, sometimes it's as simple as writing a letter to reverse those policies.
Okay. And listeners, what do you think of Trump's pick for education secretary? Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. I want to go to some callers right now. We have Janet in West Orange, New Jersey. Janet, welcome to WNYC.
Hi. Thank you very much. As I was listening to the show, I was reading through the New York Times as well, and there's an article, What the U.S. Can Learn from Other Nations' Schools. And it really relates to Betsy DeVos's appointment very importantly. The article talks about the international test that's given every 3 years called the PISA. And as quoted in the article, it says, the United States is treading water in the middle of the pool. In math, American teenagers perform slightly worse than they usually do on PISA. And then the article goes on to talk about their ideas of what we need to have a successful school system. And it says, generally speaking, the smartest countries tend to be those that have acted to make teaching more prestigious and selective. And that's exactly what Betsy DeVos has no interest in whatsoever. The teacher is the least important part of her idea of what makes a good school. And then it goes on to say positive things are directing more resources to their neediest children. And this is where Betsy DeVos's idea about the vouchers is really exposed to be such a sham. If you give a voucher for like $5,000, $6,000 even, which I doubt it would be that much, to a poor inner city kid, they're not going to be able to go to the most prestigious prep schools that cost $40,000 and $50,000 a year. This has been tried in Michigan, in her state, mostly because of what she's been able to do in Michigan. And the Michigan educational system has been failing for a long time. Their scores are lower and lower and lower every year. So her policies have been a failure, and this is why I don't understand how she's even being considered for the position. And then it also says
she's been offered the position. Right. Yeah. Do you want to speak on the voucher, the cost
sure.
of the vouchers?
Yeah, Janet's making a lot of good points. We do know from social science, not just in Michigan, but in other states across the country, states like Louisiana, example, New Orleans, that students who receive vouchers, it's not just that they don't perform better than traditional public school students. They often do quite a bit worse. So it's not a strategy that has led to a lot of academic success. That's correct. In terms of teachers, a topic that I write about quite a bit, many people in the education reform community have been very focused over the past 10, 15 years on the role of the teacher. Betsy DeVos is not one of those people. She is much more concerned with school choice, not necessarily school choice as a way to drive measurable academic gains, but school choice as a good in and of itself. I mean, she truly believes that just the act of making the choice is something that is empowering to families, empowering to low-income families. And I think it's worth stating that idea in its strongest way possible, because we do know that even when students do worse with the vouchers, their parents are happy to have them. So I think it's an interesting kind of ideological debate to have. But Janet is certainly correct that this is not a strategy that has led to, say, higher test scores.
What do you think, I mean, will Betsy DeVos's place in the department, Will teachers and students be able to feel that in the classroom? Do you see it playing out that way?
I think we have to wait and see. I think President Obama certainly used the Department of Education quite aggressively, and teachers did feel major changes to the way they were evaluated, to the way that students were tested. President Obama drove an enormous amount of change at the school and classroom level. I think it will be hard for Trump to do the same because President Obama's role in changing the way students are tested, for example, was so controversial that in 2015, Congress rolled back much of those efforts.
And President-elect Trump has said that he wants to expand vocational training as well, and he wants to increase access to pre-K, which I imagine are among some of his more popular policy ideas. Is finding the funding to expand pre-K and expand vocational training, is that something that he also alone can do?
So pre-K will be very difficult. Republicans in Congress, like Speaker Paul Ryan, are big critics and skeptics of pre-K. Paul Ryan has many times written and spoken about what he considers the failures of Head Start, the only federal pre-K program we have. So even though Trump's transition website right now says that he will expand access to high-quality pre-K, and even though Pence actually did that as governor of Indiana, it's very difficult to see a big push on pre-K coming from Washington with the current Congress. Now, career and technical education, vocational education is a different story. There's the Perkins Act, which is about $1.3 billion annually for career and technical education. Congress already has the bipartisan votes to pass that. Trump ran kind of critiquing this idea that everybody needs to go to college, really talking about the honor and dignity of technical work. And I think we can expect to potentially see very early in this new year that Perkins Act moving out of Congress and President-elect Trump signing that law.
Okay, and I want to go to some more callers. We have Tom in Westfield, New Jersey. Tom, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you very much. Thanks for taking my call. Interesting conversation. You know, all during the Trump campaign, he spoke about the horrific performance of inner-city schools and how charter schools have, especially in New York City, like Success Academy, Eva Moskowitz School, which, you know, a rumor was that he offered her the position before Betsy DeVos. And I tell you what, like, you know, the inner city students are being underserved by the present public education system. Anytime someone like an Eva Moskowitz comes up and does well, the teachers' unions attack her because they are more interested in, you know, the unions, and I'm not saying all teachers are like this, but the unions are more interested in feathering their nest and helping the teachers as opposed to having a quality education.
All right.
So
thank
you,
Tom.
I think some of the things that you said are not true about charters.
Okay. Thank you, Tom, for your call. I want to go to Jackie in Hastings on Hudson, New York. Jackie, you're on WNYC.
I just wanted to bring up something that is often overlooked when these are discussed, which is that the people doing this education privatization are not really interested in education. They're not child development experts. They're not educators. What they are interested in is they see a large public funds that go directly from the taxpayer into education. It's like they see Social Security the same way they see Medicare. They want to capitalize on those public funds. They look at it, they see somebody should be making money off of it, and that's what it is. It's that these systems actually work. I'm not saying education works so great, and we certainly need to be, you know, improve public schools in this country. But the fact of the matter is, they see this money that we pay in taxes, and they say, gee, somebody should make money on it. Look what happened in Massachusetts. The hedge funds in New York were paying money to try and stop, to promote this Proposition 2 so that they could continue to open as many charter schools per year as they wanted. Why are hedge funds interested in that? It's because of the money they can make. Their children go to $35,000 a year private schools. It's the money. It's the same thing. They see Social Security, they see Medicare. They see money that moves from the taxpayer into a system that's pretty good and that we're learning how to work and that improves. And they think, somebody should be making money on this.
Okay. Thank you, Jackie, for your call. And I want to go to one more caller. Jack in Manhattan has a question about how the federal government can overcome state and local objections. Jack?
Yes. I know Betsy Ross. I'm from Michigan. She's an extremely conservative person, and under no circumstances would she have ever achieved any ability to operate a system in the state of Michigan, let alone the idea of her undertaking the responsibility in the federal government. But we have constitutional prohibitions in the state that the people enacted with regard to the distribution of monies to non-public schools and especially to the religious schools as violations of the First Amendment. And we are very concerned about the fact that the public has already stated this in their own votes. And how can the federal government come in and then override the objections of the votes of the people and the Constitution with regard to the distribution of funds to non-public and religious schools?
Dana?
Sure. A number of good points made by all the callers. First of all, to that last question, it's true that some states prohibit the use of public education dollars on private education, but not all. And if students receive vouchers, they won't just be able to use those at private schools, but also to move their public dollars from public school to public school. So vouchers could have big effects regardless of that. Now, a few questions about charter schools, and it can be a bit confusing. In New York City and in Massachusetts, charter schools are generally nonprofit charter schools, and they're quite tightly regulated. And these are the states where we see pretty good success from charter schools. For example, the Success Academies here in New York City, run by Eva Moskowitz, who the caller mentioned, are nonprofit. They're tightly regulated, and they do have rather good results. Detroit and Michigan, where Betsy DeVos has been so active in lobbying on behalf of school choice, is a completely different story. Very many charter schools in Detroit are for profits, and they have bad results. So when we talk about charters, we really need to distinguish between the places where they've had some success, like New York or Massachusetts, and the places where they have unfortunately failed to drive big gains for kids like Michigan.
And we have time for one last question. As we all watch Trump's appointments, we sort of wonder how important the person is. Can Betsy DeVos truly gut, as you have written, the American educational system? You write in your article that Trump will still be able to appoint at least seven other high-level officials to the Department of Education, who will then also hire more people. So how influential is any one education secretary?
I think that remains to be seen. She could be a very powerful advocate on the national stage for school choice, but she doesn't have a lot of experience in running a bureaucracy. So I don't actually think it's highly likely that she'll gut public education, which was the title of my article, though not something I actually wrote in there myself. But I do think we need to look at the other high-level appointments to the agency, and we need to consider what Trump himself will prioritize. This incoming president has so much to deal with. He's talked about infrastructure, jobs, trade, foreign policy. We need to see if education rises to the top of his agenda.
Okay, and we're going to end it there. Dana Goldstein is the author of The Teacher Wars. She contributes to Slate, The New Republic, and The Marshall Project. And her latest articles for Slate are on how Trump could overhaul, revamp the public education system. Dana, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Sarah.
All right. This is The Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. I am Sarah Gonzalez, in for Brian. Next up, what immigration lawyers are advising undocumented immigrants to do before January 20th. Stay with us.